I'm a success today because I had a friend who believed in me and I didn't have the heart to let him down. Those are the words of our 16th president. They are also the words that suggest success stories are not written in a bubble. They are fostered by a community trust and through service to others. These are the stories you're about to hear, told by the voices who are living them.
I was named after Senator Paul Douglas. My name is Paul Douglas Collins. I grew up in the county jail.
I'm Bill Curtis, and this is the Lincoln Laureates podcast series. Each episode spotlights an individual bestowed with the Order of Lincoln.
The first time I met Ron Howard from Happy Days, who played Opie, I happened to tell him that he was actually playing my life story, because my dad was the sheriff, my uncle was a deputy, my grandmother was the cook, and I lived upstairs.
These conversations are presented by the Lincoln Academy of Illinois, established in 1964 to recognize and honor leaders who have contributed to the betterment of humanity.
And my claim to fame is now I'm always introduced to young people who goes, this is the guy that coached Michael Jordan.
During this episode of the Lincoln Laureates, we'll hear how a son of an Illinois sheriff became a father of 21st century basketball. Paul Douglas Collins led Team USA in the controversial 1972 Munich Games. His storied career at Illinois State University made him 1973's number one draft pick in the NBA, where he was a four-time All-Star selection and a four-time head coach.
I don't know how to explain. I always tell people to dream big. Well, I outlived my dream.
Doug Collins is a member of the Lincoln Laureates Class of 2020. Our guest host for this conversation is award-winning broadcast journalist Ron Claiborne.
Doug, can you tell me, where did your initial interest, your passion, your love for the game of basketball, where did that come from?
Well, I grew up in a small community, Ron, Benton, Illinois, about 6,000, 7,000 people. And we had an amazing high school basketball coach there by the name of Rich Herron. Our community was so involved in our high school basketball. It was what you worked at as a young kid, is to get a Benton Ranger jersey because of what it meant. And so, you know, when I was probably in the sixth grade or so, I started falling in love with basketball. And a lot of it was because of the passion and love that my high school coach had.
Rich Herron is a real icon among high school basketball. What was he like? What did you learn from him?
Integrity. He was a man of the highest integrity. I modeled myself after him because I never had any dreams, Ron, of being a professional athlete. I was 6 feet tall and weighed 130 pounds my junior year in high school and didn't even start my own high school team. When I went to school at Illinois State, I wanted to come back and be a Coach Herron. I wanted to be a guidance counselor at a high school and a high school basketball coach before my basketball career really took off, especially once I got to Illinois State. I used to go to bed every night when I was in college as a freshman, and I couldn't wait for the next day because I felt myself getting better. I felt myself getting more confident. Coach Herron was the spark that got it ignited.
Well, when did this skinny kid start to believe he actually had a possible chance to play in the NBA, much less be the first round draft pick in the NBA?
Ron, I played for the first black coach in Division I basketball, Will Robinson. He had come over after my freshman year out of the Detroit Public League. I fell in love with Coach Robinson. He said, you know, if you'll trust me, I'll get you to where I want to go. Well, as a sophomore, Ron, I still didn't think I had any chance to be in the NBA. But my junior year, we took off. I was the third leading scorer in the country. I got invited to go to the Olympics. And when I made an Olympic team in 1972, I felt then that my dreams could come true, that maybe I could be an NBA player.
Did you appreciate the history that Will Robinson was making at the time as the first Division I African-American coach NCAA?
Probably not. You know, there's people that teach you the X and O's of the game. Coach Herron taught me that, and I learned life from Coach Robinson. I grew up in an all-white community. with Coach Robinson, I started learning about the city, the inner city of Detroit, and all that he went through there. In 1972, when we were trying to become Division I, we had to play X number of games against teams that were Division I. Well, they didn't want to play us at our place. We had to play them at their place. So we played Arkansas, Fayetteville, Arkansas, Barnhill Arena. Never forget it. We went in there, and we had these people sitting behind our bench. And the things they said to Coach Robinson were the most heinous things I've ever heard said to a human being. He never blinked, never flinched. We won the game. He put his arms around me. He always called me champ. He said, "Champ, we had a good win tonight," or whatever. I said, "Yes, coach." I said, "But how do you do it? How can you take that and not react?" And he said, "Those are ignorant people. I'm not going to respond to ignorance." And he said to me, he said, "Champ, you know what? Those people don't realize one of these days they're going to have a black coach here at Arkansas."
Tell me a little bit about growing up in Mayberry.
You've done your homework, Rod. You've done your homework, man. You knew that I was Opie. My father was the sheriff, and we actually lived in the jail. And the cells were downstairs. My bedroom was upstairs. There was a big steel door on my bedroom. And so when I would go up, when I'd be upstairs, I'd get ready to go to bed. They'd tuck me in bed, and then they would lock up that steel door so if something happened, none of the prisoners could get up and get to me. I tell you, one of the things I learned, Ron, is I learned I didn't want to break the law and go to jail.
Doug, how have your Illinois roots, your small town Illinois roots, shaped your life and your values?
Back in my day, Benton was a very middle class of people, farmers who worked so hard, school teachers, coal miners. But I think the thing that came through more than anything else was how hard people worked. I put up hay for my friend's dad, who was a farmer, and how hard that was. I worked on the county highway paving roads, and how hard that was. I think what happens also too is, you know, this old expression, the greatest gift you can give your children are roots and wings, roots to where it all started, and then wings to fly, to go and thrive and do what you do best, be passionate. And that's what I've done.
Let's talk basketball. I was watching ESPN special when you were on your way to the Wizards, and within 5 minutes, three different people described you as intense.
Oh, yeah, I am intense. There's no doubt about that. I'm competitive. I got that from my high school coach, I think. We were asking a while ago about something with Coach Heron. Well, he was passionate, and he was intense, and he was competitive. And so I think that was a part of my success. But I think also it could be a curse sometimes. Sometimes what is a blessing is a curse. And I look back on it and say, you know what, if I was ever a coach again, I would think I would have a better understanding the difference between passion and emotion. And sometimes I allowed my passion to lead into emotion, and emotion doesn't work. You know, emotion burns out, it flames out, whereas passion, it lives within your heart forever.
You were on that USA Olympic team in Munich.
Yes.
Where they played that the end of the game over and over until they got it, quote unquote, right. Obviously, the Russians ultimately prevailed in what's considered one of the great sort of travesties of the Olympics. Does that still gall you?
Every Olympic year when I was working, that would hit me because, you know, if you want to think about it, Ron, think about how my life could have been different. Think about how my life would have been different had I missed those two free throws and we lost by a point. Can you imagine what I would have gone through the rest of my life of not being able to come through under pressure? And how about this? How about if those two free throws stand and we win? You know, I'm viewed as one of the top pressure guys in the Olympic basketball. Well, with what happened, that's not the case. Now, I know what it meant to our team. We had a 40-year reunion down in Kentucky where we all got together. That's the first time we'd all been in the room together since 1972. It was raw. We cried together. We told stories. We laughed. You know, we're connected, Ron, through pain. We had that pain of that feeling we had when we thought we were the champions and it was taken away from us, and we didn't get to hear the national anthem. I told these guys in 2008 and 2020 when I spoke to the team, I said, you don't want to be bonded in pain. You want to be bonded in joy. And I want the last song for you to hear as you get ready to leave is the national anthem.
Tell me about playing in the NBA. I've spoken to former athletes, and interestingly enough, pro athletes in different sports. They talk about not the games so much. The one theme you hear is the camaraderie,
yes,
of being on a team, a band of brothers. What was that like?
Boy, you hit the nail on the head, Ron. I mean, just exactly just what you said, a band of brothers. How 8 pounds of air, 8 pounds of air, and how it brings people together. Ron, there's no greater feeling than playing an NBA playoff game and winning, going in your locker room, cutting that tape off your ankles, sitting back in your locker, looking around the room at the men who were there with you and have nothing left to give on that particular night. You gave it emotionally, you gave it physically, you gave everything you had to win that game. And Ron, my story, basketball-wise, when I went to Philadelphia and I was drafted in 1973, the Sixers were 9-73. They were the worst team in the history of professional basketball, and that still stands today. And so that's what I was going to. Well, I'm going to tell you how it started for me. You know, Philly's a tough town. You know, that's blue collar. They want to see you bring it every single day. Well, I broke my foot the minute I got to Philly, right before training camp. I broke my foot. My wife and I had just gotten married. We found out that she was pregnant, bought a condo, and we couldn't get any furniture or bed. So my wife and I slept on beanbag chairs for 7 days till we could get a bed. So that was my indoctrination. I didn't know anybody except my teammates. I took a lot of heat that I got hurt. I tried to play. My foot was still broken. I only played 25 games. Then finally I had to have surgery. But I had one thing. I said, you know, if I'm a bust, it'll be because I get hurt, not because I couldn't play. So when I came back, I had such a chip on my shoulder that I said, nothing is going to keep me from being the best I could be. I was a part of that team growing up in 77. Unfortunately, we lost in the NBA Finals to Bill Walton. We lost in 78 to Wes Unseld. They went on to win the championship. And so I have this little saying, if I were ever to write a book, the title would be Always a Winner, But Never a Champion. Because I've always felt like I've been a winner, but I've never hoisted the trophy. You know, I've been close. I've been close to player. I've been close to coach. I've been close as an Olympian. And that taste of being the final team standing, I never got that. But my brothers did. Those guys that we started playing with, Dr. J, Mo Cheeks, Andrew Toney, Bobby Jones, my teammates in 83 won that championship. And I was so happy for them, what they all went through to get there. So there is nothing like being on a team. And I used to have a saying as a coach, believe in your role, stay in your role, star in your role.
Is not having won the title, is that one of your life regrets? Or is that, that's part of life? You just move on.
It's part of life. And it's lessons that I teach to my grandchildren today. When you strive for something and maybe not get it, there's a level of heartache that goes with that. And so I teach my boys now, 12 and 14 and 12, you know, baseball, they're playing a lot of baseball. Baseball is a failure sport. You can fail 7 out of 10 times, and if you play long enough, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. So how do you learn to deal with failure? So understanding it's not fatal, but it's really the beginning of who you're going to be. When I had my heart broken or when I failed, I looked in the mirror and I said, what role did I have to play in that failure? And how can I be better the next time? In 2009, I was selected to go into the Hall of Fame as a broadcaster. It was called the Kurt Gowdy Award. And after the ceremony, we had a little dinner with my family. And my son stood up and he clanked the glass and he said, I have something for my dad. And he reached in pocket and he put his gold medal around my neck. And he said, Dad, this is 37 years too late, but you got your gold medal. So the 2012 gold medal hangs in my house. And it's one of the highlights of my life. It was one of the greatest moments I've ever had with my son.
That's great. That is a great story, Doug. Thanks for that. Your first coaching assignment, first coaching job, Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you're around the game, so you know Michael Jordan is a pretty good basketball player. When you become the coach, do you realize just how great a player he is, and does that affect how you coach the team?
Listen, I watched the playoffs that year. Michael missed all but 18 games the year before I became the coach. He had a broken foot, the tarsal navicular, where he came down flat-footed and just broke the bone all the way through. That is a bone that's very hard to heal because it gets very little blood flow. Well, I had some experience with that because I had stress fractures in both of my tarsal navicularies that I tried to play through one year, and I just couldn't. It was like stepping on a red-hot poker that they were putting in your foot, so I couldn't play with that. So first time I met Michael, I was 36 years old. I'd never been a head coach. It was at the doctor's office, and he had just come off the playoffs where he'd scored like 63 points against the Celtics. I walk in there, never been a head coach. Well, the first thing we do is we connect through this injury. And I talked to Michael about how tough that injury could be. And it was interesting. You know, I found out from him at that moment who he is. He said, you know what? That was your foot. This is mine. So I don't want you to be worried about my foot. I love to play basketball, and I'm going to play. Ron, I've been in the locker rooms of the greatest of the greatest. And Michael Jordan has something that is so amazing. He has this incredible drive to be the best. People don't realize, Ron, they see all the things he did above the rim. It all started with his impeccable footwork. He had no wasted motion. Everything he did was with a sense of purpose. My first year there, he averaged like 35, 36 a game. We moved up to 40 wins. Then the next year, we hit the jackpot in the draft with Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant. That draft totally changed the Chicago Bulls. But I tell you what Michael Jordan did for me, Ron, is he made me aware of how he expected me to be at the top of my game so I could help him the best way I could. I have two jerseys hanging at my home in Arizona. One of them is Michael's last game in Chicago, and the other one is his last game playing in Washington when I was coaching.
And one of those jerseys you have, I understand, he inscribed.
Yes, he did.
What did he write on the jersey to you?
Well, the one from Chicago was to Doug, thanks for the education, Michael Jordan. Well, thanks for the education. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, Michael, maybe I did help him a little bit. And then the Washington is basically to Doug, thanks for your friendship.
I want to go back to trust and truth because, you know, one could say that those are the ingredients that form integrity, which Abraham Lincoln represented. Trust and truth and honesty, so important in sports, in relationship, in life.
Well, you know, Ron, it's interesting thing about trust. And I say it's something that you gain in drops and you lose it in buckets. Trust and truth to me, Ron, are the basis of everything. But the thing about trust, it's something that you have to live it, you have to love it, and you have to speak it. And to truth cannot come before trust because you don't have that relation yet. Once you get that relationship of trust, now it's much easier to speak the truth. Sometimes you speak the truth too soon and it's confrontation, it can get chaotic. I've got a tattoo on my forearm and it says grace and grit. Life is about grace. Grace changes everything. And then grit and resiliency. Are you gritty sandpaper? Do you have that gritty toughness? And then are you resilient? Can you get your butt knocked down 7 times and can you get up 8? Because Ron, we all get our butts knocked down. Those men, those women who can get up, stand up and be stronger for it. Trust and truth, grace and grit. And then I say faith, hope, and love. Because the greatest thing there is love. I want to make a difference, Ron, and I want to go to bed at night to a peaceful pillow. I don't want a bunch of stuff rattling in my brain. I want God's peace in my head that when I wake up the next day, I have that peace of saying, okay, what are you going to do to help make a difference in somebody's life? And that's the way I'm wired.
Well, the Lincoln Laureates are honored for service, and it clearly service is a value to you. What inspires you to that?
Well, I told you I'm about stories, and this is a story that changed my life. In 1981, my high school coach, Rich Herron, that I'd spoke to you about earlier, said, Doug, let's run a basketball camp together, and we want to do it down at the Tennessee Military because we can get the facility. We can bus the kids from Southern Illinois to there. It's about 8 to 10 hour bus trip. My son and I were going to be there. My son at that point in time was 7 years old. So the pastor of this church in Alney, Illinois, had a private plane. So instead of having to bus for 10 hours, he took my son and I down there. Flying down, Ron, we were flying all this mountainous, these high tree levels, 1,000 feet. They were up in the air with the mountains and all. And I was scared. And I asked the pastor, I said, I'm a little bit scared. And he looked at me and said, only thing that can happen is pilot error. We're fine. So we had to circle over these pine trees and come in and land. Let us off. We're going to have the camp. And then on Friday, he was picking my son and I up. He was going to fly us to Alney, Illinois, where Coach Herron's brother coached. I was going to do a clinic. I was going to talk about my faith at his church. And his daughter had written a song to me that she wanted to sing for me. And it was sort of the essence about something ending too soon. And she was talking about my career. So on Friday, when they flew back to get us, it was so foggy. It was not instrument rated. Shouldn't have been up in the air because of all the fog. Well, the plane crashed. He died. His 10-year-old son died. And a young man, Chip Jennings, was getting ready to go to college, died. And I prayed about this, Ron. Why wasn't I on that plane? Why did it happen with my son and I? And it tore at me. I had to speak at 3 funerals in one day. This thing hit me hard, like, why? And the answer I got, I'm keeping you around, and I want you to be with young people, and I want you to try to make a positive in their life. I ran basketball for 25 plus years. My basketball camp didn't attract the high level players. They were kids that maybe were on their high school team, but we're not going any further. We brought them together. They each had a team. We try to learn a life lesson every single day. And that moment in 1981, when I wasn't on that plane, I was saved to, I think, make a difference in young people's lives.
Abraham Lincoln appreciated the power of living histories as a source of wisdom and inspiration for future generations. The Lincoln Academy of Illinois was created to recognize the living histories of those who walk among us, believing, as Lincoln did, that those living histories remind future generations of the endless possibilities ahead. For nearly 6 decades, the Lincoln Academy of Illinois has bestowed the Order of Lincoln Medallion annually to honor the state's most distinguished citizens by birth or residence. In 1975, the Academy expanded to recognizing emerging young leaders selected by their universities. These shining stars of the future receive the Order of Lincoln Medallion as student laureates. You can read the stories of every Lincoln laureate by visiting the Lincoln Academy of Illinois.org. Please take a moment to rate these podcasts and share episodes across your social media channels. Executive producers for the Lincoln Laureates podcast series are Julie Kellner and Dennis Lyle. Supervising producer is Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Bill Curtis. Thanks for listening.